speaking of heavenly bodies, my eyes went to a packet. The seal was nice and red and heavy and official. I remember the line of Irene Adler's throat, the trim of her calves under silk, the swell of...
Well, no one said anything about not examining the merchandise. I listened out, and Moriarty was whistling to his wasps, likely to be absorbed for hours. There was no tread on the stair, and Mrs. Halifax was ordered to keep all callers away, so no chance of interruption. I sat at the bureau and turned up the gas lamp to illuminate the blotter. With a deft bit of penknifery, I lifted the seal intact so it could be reattached with no one the wiser. My mouth was dry, as if I'd been in a hide for hours watching a staked-out goat awaiting the pad of a big cat. I poured a healthy snifter of brandy, an apt accompaniment to this pleasurable perusal. With a warm pulse in me vitals, I slid the contents out of the packet.
It was like iced water tipped into my lap.
There were photographs. Views of Zenda Castle, with figures on the battlements. One wore a gauzy hat with a dead bird stuck to it, the other a comic opera uniform. Even at a distance, I'd recognize the lovebirds, Irene Adler and Colonel Sapt. Disgusting, I blurted. A sheet of paper was slipped into the sheaf of photographs.
My dear Colonel Moran, I knew you'd not be able to resist a peek at these artistic studies. Sorry for the disappointment. For what it's worth, you may keep all monies which can be raised from them. If blackmail proves unprofitable, I suggest you license them to a manufacturer of postcards. My very best to the prof. I knew I could rely on him to toss a pebble in the pond, sending out ripples enough to make a maelstrom. An ordinary workman would just have secured the package and been done with it. Only a genius on the level of a Bonaparte could turn a simple task into the prompt for turmoil raised across a whole continent. Please convey the thanks of another colonel. Being chief of secret police in one of the most peaceable, least insurrection-blighted spots on the map was not a career with a future. The Elfbergs were intent on retiring him, but now, I fancy, he'll be kept on with an increase in salary. I expect you to retain the last study for sentimental reasons, and I remain, dear Colonel Moran, very truly yours, Irene Adler. I flipped through several more entirely innocent tourist photographs of picturesque Ruritania until, at the bottom of the stack, I beheld the full face of the American Nightingale. In this final, studio-posed photograph, she wore the low-cut bodice she had affected on her visit to Conduit Street, somewhat loosened and lowered, though, dash it, artistic fogging around the edges of the portrait prevented complete immodesty. Through the fog was scrawled her spidery autograph, as ever, Irene. I gulped the brandy and chewed my moustache for a few moments, contemplating this turn of events. Behind me, a door opened. I swiveled in the chair. Moriarty looked at me, eyes shining. He had thought it through, and was unhappy. When the professor was unhappy, other creatures, animals, children, even full-grown men, tended to learn of it in extreme and uncomfortable manners. Moriarty, I began. I'm afraid we've been stung. I held up Irene's photograph. He spat out a word. And that was how a great shambles broke out in Belgravia, shaking the far-off kingdom of Ruritania, and how the worst plans of Professor Moriarty were exploited by a woman's treachery. When he speaks of Irene Adler, or when he refers to her photograph, it is always as that bitch. A Shambles in Belgravia was written by Kim Newman and read by Andrew Sachs. It was directed and